Welcome to the deep dive. So today we're really digging into something foundational, how Christians make sense of the world through their faith.
Right. We're looking at Christian philosophy, not just as abstract ideas, but as a way to, you know, build a coherent understanding of, well, everything based on Christian thought.
Exactly. And the source material we have points out something interesting straight away. The Bible, while absolutely central, isn't like a philosophy textbook laid out ABC.
Mm-hmm. It's revelation, narrative, wisdom, but not a systematic philosophical treatise. So Christians have this task, really, of developing a consistent worldview.
Which immediately brings up the question, where do you start? What are the grounding points?
That's the core of it. And religion fundamentally shapes our worldview, right? It gives us those basic ideas, those presuppositions that any philosophy rests on.
Okay, so presuppositions. And we're touching on post-foundationalist ideas here, particularly in the Reformed tradition. This kind of pushes back against the Enlightenment idea, doesn't it?
It really does. The Enlightenment really wanted foundations based purely on, you know, sense experience or abstract reason, things supposedly everyone could agree on, regardless of faith.
And Reformed epistemology tackles this. Some thinkers talk about warrant-like, the justification for holding a belief.
Right, Plantinga and Wolterstorff focus a lot on that. How is religious belief justified? Is it reasonable?
But then there's someone like Cornelius Van Til, who comes at it slightly differently, more about pre-theoretical commitment.
Yeah, Van Til emphasizes the presupposition itself, rooted in religious commitment, even before you start building the arguments, a deeper starting point.
So Plantinga and Wolterstorff, they really challenged that Enlightenment view that knowing God can't be foundational, right?
Absolutely. They ask, why can't belief in God be a starting point? Why does it need to be built on something supposedly more neutral?
Which contrasts sharply with, say, John Locke. He's the classic foundationalist example.
Right. Locke argued your foundational beliefs, the bedrock, must come from sense perception, what you see, touch, hear, or logical deduction from that. Stuff accessible to anyone.
Seems reasonable on the surface.
Well, yes, but it runs into problems. David Hume later pointed out, our senses can fool us. And induction, reasoning from specifics to a general rule, isn't logically watertight.
Uh-huh. And there's a bigger issue too, isn't there?
Exactly. The very rule, the demand that all knowledge must be based on senses or logic, that rule itself can't be proven by senses or logic, it's kind of self-defeating.
Huh. Right. So if that foundation is shaky, what's the alternative?
Well, this brings us to Thomas Reed. Scotty common sense philosophy, it's fascinating.
Okay, tell us about Reed.
Reed basically said, look, we operate with innate belief dispositions, things we naturally trust, like the existence of the external world or our memory. Reason helps organize these beliefs, but we don't deduce them from scratch.
So we just trust things.
In a way, yes. He critiqued what he called the way of ideas, this Locke-Hume picture, where we first perceive ideas in our minds and then wonder if they match reality. Reed said, we directly perceive the world.
And Wolterstorff picks up on this.
He does. Wolterstorff uses Reed to argue that life would be impossible if we constantly doubted basic assumptions. Think about sitting on a chair.
You don't logically prove its existence and stability first.
Exactly. You just sit. You operate on a warranted assumption unless there's a specific reason to doubt.
Okay, so that leads to warranted beliefs. What makes a belief warranted for Wolterstorff and Plantinga?
It's not necessarily about universal proof. It's more about whether the belief fits properly within your whole system of beliefs and experiences, your worldview, and how it functions for you. Is it formed by reliable processes within that framework?
And this challenges the idea of neutral ground again.
Definitely. Wolterstorff argues that the foundationalist demand for neutrality itself rests on certain, often unacknowledged, faith commitments.
So religious beliefs can be basic, starting points.
That's the argument. They can be properly basic or warranted beliefs, self-attesting, non-arbitrary starting points for the believer. Plantinga points to Calvin, Bavinck, Barth. They all essentially took belief in God as basic, rejecting the need to first prove God through natural theology.
But it has to cohere, right? It can't just be any random belief.
Precisely. It needs coherence with the believer's whole world and life view, to use Kuyper's term. It has to make sense within the larger picture.
Now, Van Til. He seems even more forceful on this idea of no neutrality.
Oh, absolutely. For Van Til, there's no middle ground. You're either operating from a theistic presupposition or an anti-theistic one. He was quite critical of trying to find common ground based on reason alone, unlike maybe some earlier theologians.
So for him, it all comes back to these deep presuppositions.
Yes. the self-attesting scripture, the triune God, these are the non-negotiable starting points. They're pre-theoretical, he'd say. They come before you even build your logical systems.
Is this related to philosophical ideas like a priori knowledge?
It's related, but distinct. Presuppositions for Van Til are deeper than just a priori concepts. They are fundamental commitments shaping how you approach theory and logic itself. It's not just knowing something before experience, it's the lens through which you see experience.
Okay. And John Frame described Van Til's view as multi-perspectival, trying to balance things.
Yeah. Frame sees Van Til as trying to hold together the a priori, our God-given framework, and the a posteriori, our experience in the world, seeing all knowledge ultimately rooted in God.
So Van Til would say the problem isn't the method someone uses to try and know things without God,
but the fundamental presupposition that there is no God to begin with, that's the root issue.
And he used this term ethical to describe religious commitment. That sounds a bit confusing.
It can be. He meant it not in the sense of just morals, but as a fundamental reorientation of the whole person towards God. Think Kuyper's Palingenesis or Dewey Weird's religious ground motive. It's about the direction of one's life and thought.
So it's a change in principle, a turning back to God.
Yes, turning from apostasy to covenantal obedience. And crucially, it's entirely God's work. It's not that our basic human nature, the imago Dei, is lost and it's marred, but that its direction is renewed.
Okay, so pulling it all together, the central idea seems to be
that human thought, all of it, is ultimately shaped by our response to God, specifically the Trinity. These foundational presuppositional ideas flow from that core commitment.
So quite a journey through different takes on Christian epistemology. We've seen the foundationalist approach, the critiques, and the development of ideas like warranted belief and presuppositions.
Yeah, focusing on how faith isn't just a compartment, but the very ground upon which Christians seek to understand reality.
Which leaves us with something for you, the listener, to consider. How do your own fundamental beliefs, the things you take for granted, perhaps shape how you interpret everything else? What are your pre-theoretical commitments, even in areas you might think are separate from faith? Something to mull over. Thanks for joining our deep dive today.